faith-filled finance. All major UK bank accounts. One app. Provision is built by Christians to help you steward what God's given you. Track your spending, saving, and giving in one place. Join the waitlist now at provision.money and get your first month free. That's provision.money.
Leadership File on Premier.
It's my joy to welcome you to the Leadership File, the show that aims to help you lead as Christ would have you lead, wherever he has placed you. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and whether you listen live on a Sunday or one of many thousands who catch up via the podcast, it's great that you can join us. You may be aware that the UK Church's understanding of its role in world mission has been steadily changing over recent decades. In former generations, the West to the Rest model prevailed. It was seen as the British Church's job to mobilise people, to send them to evangelise the rest of the world. And whilst this approach still has some merit, most now recognise the need has changed, not least because the Church in parts of Africa, Asia and South America is growing rapidly, and the size of the UK church is declining. Our mission expertise needs to be more strategic. And so the UK mission agencies that help mobilise and send people have had to adjust to the changing needs of the world, but face significant leadership challenges of their own, including their role as charities and the governance issues that arise from that. Well, to talk about this, I'm joined by Eddie Arthur, who has looked at some of these issues as part of a PhD. He has served as the Executive Director of Wycliffe UK, and had served for 12 years in Ivory Coast on Bible translation. So lovely to have you back, Eddie, to the Leadership File.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you, Andy.
And congratulations on the PhD. So you'll be looking forward to being called Dr. Eddie Arthur.
Dr. Eddie sounds like a saxophonist in a New Orleans jazz band. I think I'll probably use the title for about a week.
And then... It'll lose its interest. You know, okay, fair enough.
I'm not much into titles, though I did have a supervisor who used his PhD as an excuse to park in the hospital car park where it said doctors only.
Very good. So, I mean, your study looked at six mission agencies. So how did you kind of look at these agencies in particular?
Well, what I was interested in is the way in which their theology had an impact on what they do. You know, there are many different ways of looking at mission, many different understandings of what mission is, and I wanted to try and get a handle on the way in which those background understandings of mission were worked out in practice. So what I did was I analysed some of the sort of more foundational documents on understanding mission, the Lausanne Covenant and the Cape Town Commitment, and drew out some themes from those documents. And then I interviewed the directors of six mission agencies to see to what extent the themes that I had analysed were reflected in the life of their agencies. I then corroborated that by going through pages and pages and pages of mission agency publications and websites. And then having done that, I started looking at, well, this agency says that, this agency says something similar. Do they do similar things? So having analysed what they believed in certain specific domains, I tried to look at their practices, again, by analysing their websites and their magazines. I didn't have the money to travel around the world and visit all of these agencies, nice though that would have been.
Sure, sure. And did they, by and large, welcome the findings? I mean, or did they feel a bit embarrassed by some of the findings? I don't know. It depends how what you found, I guess.
What I found, it sort of boils down in different ways. The first thing was that really the themes that I isolated from the Lausanne documents, and they were unreached people groups, and the different ways in which we look at proclamation and social action, and then a theology of the mission of God, which is a bit geeky, and something called a missional hermeneutic, which is also rather geeky. But I discovered that in practice, a position that the organizations adopted with regard to those didn't necessarily have a great deal of impact on what they did. So there was that sort of broader theological view that some of these things which mission scholars are saying are very, very important didn't actually seem to be reflected in the practical life of the agencies.
Right, right. So, in a church leader's context, is, you know, the mission statement might be on your website. You know, you might say we want to make disciples of Jesus, but in practice, if you looked at the services and all the things that happen in the church, that may be absent, and that's that kind of disparity.
Yes, it. I mean, the way it worked out in my studies was take the issue of the relative importance of proclamation and social action. Now, this is something that, you know, Christians disagree on.
Yes.
And legitimately so. But some people would say the same thing. We value proclamation above social action, for instance. But then when you looked at what they did, sometimes they would do more social action than proclamation. And others who would say the same thing would value proclamation more. It was, you know, working out in that sort of way. And what that highlighted too was that for some agencies, not all of them, there were inconsistencies between what they said they're very definitely what they said was their message and what they were actually doing.
Perhaps we could sort of outline a more generic question, Eddie, in terms of the leadership challenges that mission agencies face. You know, it's said that a leader's job is to define reality, sometimes for the organisation they lead. What is the reality of the mission agency's world, and are they kind of grasping it?
I think I would take a little exception. I would disagree with that quote slightly.
Okay.
I think a leader's job is to understand reality and then to paint a future.
Okay, right.
You know, you have to actually discern what's going on. I think that's the leader's first role. Mm. And I'm not convinced that within the mission sector, everybody really has grasped the extent of the changes that we are facing. You know, as you highlighted in the introduction, the world church around the world is growing rapidly. The church in the UK is in decline. Equally, at the same time, the number of mission agencies in the UK is increasing. We have more agencies fishing in a smaller pool for supporters and for finance. So that is a huge challenge. But not only is the world church increasing in size, they are also, because the world church is becoming much more involved in mission and is seeing mission in its own terms, and they are the ones who are defining the future of mission, not us. And yet we have organizations who have been developed over 200 years, you know, a structure, an attitude, and we haven't always taken on board the extent of the changes and the degree to which, if we don't change, we may become irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah. And you hinted in your paper that you'd written based around your PhD that the number of British Christians, if I use the word British, in the UK anyway, people in the UK, coming forward for what you might call longer-term mission is declining. Have you worked out why you think that is?
I have to say that is anecdotal.
Okay.
I don't have hard facts on that.
Okay.
I'm trying to get them, but it is actually very difficult.
Sure.
I think there are a number of reasons. I think, one, the growth of short-term mission. The experience is that people don't become long-term missionaries without some sort of short-term experience these days. Equally, I think the fact that people have done short term means that for some folks, they feel that they've done what they should do. I think there is also an issue of a lack of, if I say confidence in the gospel, a feeling that we don't have the right to tell other people about our beliefs. There is the whole post-colonial guilt, which is still an issue in the UK. And on some practical levels, things like student debt, the difficulty of that financial difficulties that are faced by young people who would have been missionary candidates but can't get their heads above water financially is a real struggle. I think we're facing a perfect storm in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, the needs in Britain are growing. There are such massive needs in parts of the UK for the gospel. Where I'm sitting here in North Yorkshire, the percentage of evangelical Christians is lower than it is in parts of Japan.
Well, yeah.
In that sort of context, it is hard to motivate people to go and work in other parts of the world when the needs are around the corner.
And is there a sense, too, that because increasingly folk are saying that their work, their daily work, should be seen as in a missional context, then people perhaps, and I'm not saying this happens a lot, but it perhaps feel, well, that I'm doing my mission by going and doing my job in my local, you know, my local firm.
Yes, I think there is definitely a sense in which the view that mission happens everywhere, you know, it used to be that mission was overseas. We used to talk in terms of mission being overseas, evangelism was at home.
Yeah.
And now we're much more likely to talk about mission being everywhere. And I think that has, to some extent, taken international cross-cultural mission off the agenda for some people. I looked at a church's website. There was reasons why I was looking at this. And it splashed across the main page was our mission project. And I was, you know, fascinated, what's this going to be? It was building a new building. I don't think that would have been called a mission project 10 years ago.
We're listening to Leadership Farm with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Eddie Arthur. Eddie and I were talking particularly about the role of mission agencies going forward and the challenges for world mission and the present era. We'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Leadership Farm with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Eddie Arthur. Eddie has been looking at mission agencies, particularly for a PhD, and we're talking about their changing role in the current UK kind of church world and some of the implications of that in terms of leadership. We'll, in the second half, particularly be focusing upon how mission agencies are governed. And so, Eddie, I was, I've long been puzzled by the arrangement whereby charities are governed by people who are volunteers or called trustees and may not always understand the nuances of the charity. And you're concerned that the drive to tick the charity commission boxes sometimes mean that missional expertise may be lacking. Could you kind of unpack that for us?
Yeah, I think I'd be, again, it's not so much ticking the charity commission boxes, though that's one way of looking at it. The amount of regulation, the amount of form filling, box ticking, I guess, the stuff the charity trustees have to do is massive. I don't think most people are aware of the amount of background work that it takes to run a charity. And to be honest, whether you're running something massive like the Red Cross or whether you're running a small charity, you still face the same regulations. You still have not all of the same reports, but still a massive amount to do. And that means that for charities, the trustees, who are the ones who take responsibility if something goes wrong with the charity, if somebody runs off with the funds, it's the trustees who end up getting prosecuted. It is important to them that they have the professional skills necessary to do the background work. So charities will appoint trustees who are accountants, who are lawyers, who have those sorts of backgrounds of the things that they are required to do. I have a good friend who is the chair of governors, chair of trustees for a charity. He also runs his own business. He can do the accounts for his business in a couple of evenings. It takes a week to do the charity accounts. And the charity is smaller than his businesses.
Right.
But there are so many regulations that they have to face. Now, that is normal. It is understandable. But the thing is that the issues that mission agencies face, the challenges, the future that we're moving into, the challenges come from the World Church, the changes in the church around the world, the changing conceptions of mission, the changing context that we're working in. And if charities are going to plan and reflect on the future, they need to have people who have those sort of expertise, and they need to give time to those things. But very often there is very little time to do that.
Right.
And that is the challenge that mission agencies and, to be honest, across the charity sector face. The role of a charity trustee is a very difficult one, and not everyone has the time to invest in what's needed. And when you have to do all of this reporting, you have to do all of this, the governance stuff, it is very hard to set aside adequate time for reflection, for prayer, and for gaining an understanding of what's going on in the wider world.
Right. So, I mean, obviously many listeners will not be directly involved in world mission or mission agencies, but we'll be interested in the kind of strategic challenges that you're unpacking here, Eddie. And how the, I'm just wondering whether there's some solutions as to how some of these things can be overcome. Are you a bit of a lone voice on this, or are others kind of picking up on what you're saying?
I don't think I'm a lone voice. I think there are a number of us who see the same challenges. The problem is, when you're running an organisation, it is very hard to sit back and to reflect. You know, you have people whose jobs or whose ministries depend on you, and to step back and face the challenges can be difficult. You know, you have hundreds of emails coming in every day. You have recruitment targets to meet or whatever. But I think the strategic challenges come from a variety of directions. I think the most important one is, how do we stay relevant? How do agencies which were set up in order to take the gospel from the UK to the rest of the world function at a time when much of the rest of the world has a growing church? Not all of it. So how do we work alongside, not as leaders, not as the pioneers, but as co-workers with Christians from Korea, Brazil, or wherever? So there is that changing role. There is the challenge of, how do we face up to the fact that there are proportionately fewer Christians supporting mission in the UK, and yet there are more agencies. At some point, that's going to create a financial crisis. It doesn't take a degree in economics to work that one out.
Yeah.
So those are the, you know, there are challenges which come within the UK and challenges from the outside world. And how do we bridge those?
And if, you know, in 5 years' time, if changes are not made, where do you think mission agencies?
I think there are a five-year horizon, we may not see much change.
Okay.
I think the likelihood is that one or two agencies, and no one can predict which ones, are likely to hit some major financial buffers in the next few years. A lot of agencies are increasingly reliant on legacy income for their day-to-day expenditure. That's not sustainable. So I think we may see some agencies having to restructure, having to change quite quickly. that may happen in 5 to 10 years. I think some of the bigger agencies can carry on as they are. They have enough momentum, they have enough finance, they have enough of a supporter base that they'll carry on. But whether they are having a strategic impact across the world will be harder to tell. If they don't change, if they don't adapt to the global situation, then their relevance in Africa or Asia will be much less than it is now. But that won't be obvious to us here.
Sure.
It may not even be obvious to the agency leadership if they don't stop and think through this and pray through this very, very hard. It's a real challenge.
Yeah. Time's almost defeated us, Eddie, so I'm nervous about my next question because it could be quite a long answer. But I was interested in your paper that you let me see on unreached people groups. And because some years ago, unreached people groups seemed to be the kind of way to go, there was a lot of emphasis. But there's certainly some scepticism a little on whether this is really the way to go, because the definition of unreached people group is actually much more nuanced than perhaps we might have thought. Can you kind of unpack that a little bit for us?
This is a long answer. Okay. It is important to reach people with the gospel who've not heard.
Yes. Amen.
So, that's the bottom line. Paul did that. Mm. The question to me really is, how do you define that? Mm. And the way in which unreached people groups has been defined, and in which the way in which reaching them is open to question. There are sociological questions about some of the terminology. Mm. It is very easy to turn mission into a box-ticking exercise whereby that group has been reached. And yet Jesus' call is to make disciples, and you have to make disciples of all generations everywhere. It's not just to make converts. And then also, just looking at who is reached, who isn't reached. By all of the definitions, the British are reached. But if you look in some of the council estates in the north of England, there is no sign of active gospel witness in those places. So there is a lot going on there. It's not that we shouldn't be reaching people who haven't heard the gospel. It's turning it into a box-tick exercise whereby you can say these people are reached where I think there are big issues.
And, Americans have often been quick to say that, although, again, Christianity is rampant in parts of America, some sectors are as atheistic as any part of the world.
Absolutely. And that's why I find this sort of bracketing people into people groups isn't always a useful thing.
Good. Eddie, we could chat for a long time. It's fascinating to chat with you, particularly, on these issues. But where could people discover or read more of this? I mean, are there things you've read, written, or other books you think might be valuable?
At the risk of sounding arrogant, I'd point people to my blog. Mm. It's kouya.net, K-O-U-Y-A.net. I've covered most of these things over the years, and I keep coming back to them. The book I would recommend above everything else, it's possibly out of print now, it's from 2003, and it's called Mission After Christendom by David Smith. It's an absolutely cracking book. Mission After Christendom.
Good, fantastic. Mission After Christendom by David Smith. I'm just typing it in as I speak. See you? Yeah, great. Fabulous. Well, Eddie, well done, Dr. Eddie Arthur.
Thank you.
And terrific to chat with you today. Our conversation, although it's been focused on mission, has raised some of the strategic issues that all Christians in leadership face, whether they're in a church or charity or commercial setting. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome, Andy. Thank you.
So you've been listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I was joined this week by Eddie Arthur. And that book, again, that he recommended is Mission After Christendom by David Smith. And if you were searching for a pen, his blog is, again, Eddie, spell it out for us.
KOUYA.net.
Fabulous.
Kouya, okay. That is the language that we worked on the New Testament in Ivory Coast.
Wonderful stuff. Okay, I look forward to you joining us again on The Leadership File, either via podcast on iTunes or via, if you're listening via the radio, on Sundays at 3:30. So look forward to your company again. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.